On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. Be the envy of your friends and get your 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter your code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. October's Loot Crate theme is mythical. You hear the stories, the whispers of creatures and beings beyond imagination. Join us as we peer into the shadows and look into the other realms of October's truly mythical collection. Get unreal items from Marvel, Ghostbusters, Stranger Things, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. You want to get fancy? Get a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. Don't forget, before October 19th, go to lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. Loot Crate, it's the best surprise you know is coming.
Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. So pleased that you are with us again today. And I have a co-host. I have a pinch hitter this week, Greg Gabriel, nice enough to join the program. We've got Eric at home on assignment in Foxborough, and we'll get to that game in a little bit. Hub Arkish is also on assignment. So we got Greg Gabriel sitting in. You guys will know him because he's been on the podcast plenty of times before, and you've been on our website plenty of times before and seen his great work. So, Greg, thank you so much for taking time with us this morning. How's everything going?
Everything is doing real good. How about with you?
Everything is outstanding. I feel kind of fortunate because normally we take the podcasts on Thursday, and we kind of, for that reason, have to ignore the Thursday night game, either preview or review. But because we're taping here on Friday, and because it really was a riveting game last night in Oakland between the Chiefs and the Raiders, I figure we'll start there. And just a quick reminder to our listeners, check us out at on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. You can check us out both on Twitter, Greg Gabriel. It's at Greg Gabe. I am at Arthur Arkish. And Greg, the Raiders all of a sudden seem to maybe be alive in the AFC West. The Chiefs suddenly riding a two-game losing streak. There's a lot to unpack from this game, and we could do a podcast on this game alone. We're not going to, but just your general thoughts on what you saw unfold last night. 31-30 Raiders, a dramatic Derek Carr-led comeback at the end to get the Raiders out of off the schneid.
Well, you know, it's funny because as we were getting into those final few plays, and we had a last play, I think, four times. The thing that came back in my mind was going back years and years and years in a basketball game, the USA against Russia in the Olympics, where the Russians got three different chances to win, you know, to win the game, and finally they did and got the gold medal. I forgot what Olympics that was, but that's what this was reminding me of. The Chiefs or the Raiders kept getting an extra chance to win the game, and you give a team enough chances, and they will win the game. And those were legitimate calls against the Chiefs. It's not like, you know, they were penalties that came out of nowhere. Those were legitimate good calls that were made, and the Raiders finally made the most of it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I know at one time you thought the officiating last night was maybe a little over the top, but fortunately it wasn't in the high leverage moment at the end of the game. Greg's referring to the Raiders getting, gosh, what turned out to be, yeah, I think it was four shots inside the Chiefs' 10-yard line in the final 3 seconds of the game. You had a defensive holding on Ron Parker, a holding call on Eric Murray. Finally, Carr finds Michael Crabtree on the move. What about Derek Carr, Greg? Just a couple weeks removed from back surgery, and throws for over 400 yards and, again, leads this 11-play, 85-yard drive to bring the Raiders all the way back.
Well, Derek Carr is legitimately probably one of the top five or six quarterbacks in the league right now. And I don't know if he's got quite as good a supporting cast around him in Oakland as some of the other top quarterbacks have, but I mean, he's a legit player. I really liked him when he was coming out. I thought it was a steal that the Raiders got him in the second round. I had him going back to that draft as the top quarterback in that draft, and I think that was the year that Bridgewater and Manziel and those guys came out. But really good quarterback, and then on the other side you had Alex Smith, who's having really almost a career year for Kansas City this late in his career, and part of that may be because they had drafted a quarterback in the first round, and he wants to hold on to his job, and at the same time, he's in a contract year, so if Kansas City moves on, he's putting up enough good tape that he's going to make a lot of money in the free agent market if they decide not to re-sign themselves. But between the two guys, we had got over 750 yards passing in last night's game.
Yeah, pretty awesome. Three touchdowns, six combined touchdowns, zero interceptions. And I'm glad you mentioned Alex Smith, because this is not this outcome wasn't about what he was unable to do. It's about what the defense was unable to do. I think Alex Smith has to be at the top of the conversation of MVP candidates right now. He's just been remarkable on a weekly basis and was again last night. But sticking with the Raiders for a moment, Greg, what about Amari Cooper? It had been tough to watch his struggles, the drive. Just the ineffectiveness, very un-Amari Cooper-like. And last night wasn't perfect. There were a couple horrible drops. Look, he went for 210 yards and two touchdowns, and without a couple drops, he may have been closer to 300 receiving yards. But can you think of other instances of a guy this talented battling his hands a little bit? And then do you think that that's the type of the game that really kind of gets him going? I mean, obviously the numbers are huge. Do you think it's something he's able to build on now and start looking like the Amari Cooper we're accustomed to seeing?
Well, you know, I think all players go through these slumps, if you want to call it that, if you want to compare it to a baseball hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just not hitting on all cylinders. It will happen a couple times during the course of their career. It's happening to Amari right now, but then he had a strong enough game last night and came up with enough big plays, 11 catches, 210 yards, two touchdowns, that he may have worked himself out of it. So now, when you get in these types of slumps, you lose confidence, you start trying too hard and force the issue, and that ends up making more mistakes instead of alleviating the mistakes. But hopefully he worked himself out of it. The Raiders have a talented team. And I thought going into the season it was going to be between the Raiders and the Chiefs, and the way this game turned out, that's exactly what it's going to be.
Yeah, it looks like this one could go down to the wire. Now, again, the Chiefs have lost two in a row suddenly, but both, they're in it and have a chance to win both games late. It was the Steelers at Arrowhead last week, kind of exercising some of their own demons. I've got two more quick ones off this game. Greg, what about Marshawn Lynch? Did you see him run off the sideline to try and – I'm not sure if he was trying to protect his quarterback. That was his cousin on the other side of that little tussle, Marcus Peters, who put the late hit on Derek Carr, and it turned into quite a melee, and Marshawn Lynch had his hands on an official and got ejected, and reportedly spent the evening in the stands with his family, wasn't in the locker room at halftime, but came back down after the game. What do you make of this? I mean, I assume he's going to be suspended. Do the Raiders want this guy around still? What do you think happens with Marshawn Lynch?
They want him around. He's an emotional player. He always has been. He was that way in Buffalo when they drafted him. He was that way in Seattle. He's going to be that way in Oakland. He's a local guy in Oakland, so it was a true home game for him. His family's right there in the Bay Area. I think it just his emotions got the best of him after the situation. Tell you the truth, I wasn't paying that close attention to the game when that was going on until really right when he pushed the referee, and that could end up causing him probably a one-game suspension. If he's not suspended, it's going to hit him pretty good in the pocketbook. Probably $25,000, if not more. Mm-hmm. You just can't be pushing off at officials, regardless of how bad their calls are. Sometimes that's just something you can't do. So, we'll find out. Usually the day these things come down is on the Tuesday after the games are all in, but this is a Thursday night game. I think there was one instance earlier in the season where something happened on a Thursday night game, and the NFL ruled on that by Saturday, so it could happen, as soon as tomorrow, but it won't happen any later than next Tuesday.
Greg, this was a thrilling game to watch. The type of game, you know, and Thursday nights had a few of them actually this year that had been really exciting, and the types of game that I think fans like, because there's a lot of offense, there's a lot of scoring. But which one of these defenses do you trust more to get things figured out here in the next couple of months? Because they're both very talented teams, and they don't look like they're playing championship caliber defense or anything close to it right now.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the game was on Thursday night. And
okay.
I tweeted out earlier today that if the league really cared about player safety, there wouldn't be Thursday night games. You know, these guys are big guys. We all know that. And the magnitude of the hits they give and take, you know, has a dramatic effect on their body. And it takes time for the body to recover. And, you know, the Kansas City plays a game Sunday afternoon, and now you got, you know, 3 days of rest, if you want to call it that, really only one day of practice to prepare for a division opponent, and then they got to play another game. And I just don't think it's a good idea. I know why it's being done. It's being done for Monday and to grab that Thursday night television market, and there have been some exciting games, but is it the best thing for the players? I don't think so. I think if you're going to have a game during the week, the earliest it should be is on a Friday. I've written this before, and I think I've tweeted it out before, and then, you know, people come back at me and say, well, that's going to kill high school football. No, it's not. It's, you know, high school football in the towns that they're playing, it's still going to be a big deal, and the people that go to those games aren't going to change because there's an NFL game on TV. The only high schools where it might affect are high schools in those two particular cities, and, you know, they said the same thing about when colleges started playing games on Friday nights, and as we've seen, it has no effect on the high school game whatsoever.
Interesting. Yeah, I typically feel conflicted watching Thursday Night Football, Greg, because I know what it is required for these guys to recover and what a ridiculous ask it is. Last night I felt particularly conflicted because I had this game on instead of the Cubs by 8 p.m. So that was something I never envisioned, but obviously the Cubs bow out not very competitively after an interesting season. So at least we were able to get some respite on Thursday Night Football and not have to watch that horror show at the end of the Cubs season, right?
I was with you. The channel turned real quickly.
Yeah, I was not anticipating that, but again, the Cubs, 3 straight NLCS appearances. I know the listeners don't come here to hear this, so I won't go on, but hard to be too disappointed with what they accomplished. You just wish it would have been a little bit more of a fight in that Game 5. So anyway, we're on to the Week 7 slate. Again, there's so much to unpack from that Raiders game, whether it's Navarro Bowman coming in the same week he signed and getting the huge blitz to get the Raiders off the field late, or Khalil Mack on the next series. There's a lot of exciting stuff, but we're going to move on, and I think it makes sense to move right on to another primetime game, the Sunday Nighter, the Super Bowl rematch, and you got two teams, Greg, with the Falcons visiting Foxborough that are sputtering a little bit. We haven't seen New England look like its typical New England self, at least defensively yet, and the Falcons lost at home to the Dolphins in one of the big upsets of the season thus far. So do you think these are Super Bowl hangovers? I have to imagine there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, or not even behind the scenes. All I got to do is take one look at the Patriots defense and see something is not close to right.
Well, you know, what people don't always realize is there's almost a 25% turnover in player personnel on each team every year. And, you know, the forecasters could make these predictions that, you know, the X team is going to be better than they were the year before, they're going to be back in the Super Bowl or whatever, but there's a lot of luck into that. When you have a bunch of new players coming into a team, they got to gel, and then, of course, there's injuries. And anytime you have injuries to important people or core people on the team, that has an effect on how they're going to end up playing. And teams in the NFL just don't have the depth that they used to have. Number one, because there's 32 teams, and number two, there's no minor league really to help develop players. And I could even get into a third point, and that even though you got 10 players on a practice squad, the way the rules are set up, the practice squad isn't, other than having bodies for practice, how good are they being developed because of the way the rules are set up right now with the collective bargaining agreement, and that there's basically no contact during the season. During practice, you only have 12 padded practices during a 17-week season. So I think there's a lot of things that got to be changed in that. And I know I'm going off on another tangent, but that has a lot to do with why teams aren't as consistent from one year to the next. And New England has probably done a better job than anybody in staying on top of things and being at the top of that AFC East for years and years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a little bit of a tangent, Greg, but I got to tell you, with the quality of play, I know we just got done discussing a great game on Thursday night, but across the board, just the mediocrity in this league, it kind of speaks to what you're saying, that a lot of these teams are dealing, you know, dealing with a short deck, because just the competitiveness seems down. I mean, I don't think it's parity. I just think it's bad football, largely. But
I can say this, Arthur, it's bad football because technique is bad.
Well, right. It speaks to what you just said, the practice time.
And
yep.
Technique is bad because you don't have the time in practice spent on working on the technique. And why isn't that? It's because you have no contact. Now, I'm not saying that there should be 11-on-11 contact, where that's where guys are prone to get hurt more than any other time, but you can have individual drills, offensive linemen against defensive linemen, one-on-one type things that can really help even the veterans, but more so the young players, develop their technique and become better players than they are. But because the rules are set up the way they are presently, that doesn't happen, and it really hurts the game in the long run.
Yeah, it makes great sense to me. You know, it's a double whammy with the Patriots right now. You talk about not only all the turnover, but the injuries, and they're looking at half of their defensive backfield potentially being down. Stephon Gilmore is in the concussion protocol. Eric Rowe is banged up as well. So these are two guys. Of course, Stephon Gilmore gets the record contract this offseason, but Rowe sort of started Belichick's many trades, his interesting path of eschewing draft picks for veterans last year, and actually played big for them last season. The reason I bring it up is because, of course, the Falcons can't seem to get Julio Jones going, and I am curious. There's a lot of turnover with a lot of these clubs, but not much on the Falcons' offense. It's more the one on the sideline calling the plays. What do you think about Steve Sarkisian and what he's doing? How much of the Falcons' early struggles does he have to own?
Well, you know, I don't know if you can put it all on Steve, but at the same time, this is really his first year coaching in the league.
Exactly. Yep.
And, you know, he's been a college coach. He's been a very successful coordinator at the college level. He was a head coach, but there were some of his own issues that really caused him to lose that job at the University of Washington. But, you know, he has been known as a quality coach, but at the same time, he's not Shanahan, who was there last year, and they call a different type of game. I think they've tried to keep the offense basically similar from one year to the next, but still it's the play calling, how you're setting things up, and then obviously execution is just not what it was a year ago. Now, you can put it all on the coach if you want, but some of the blame's got to go on the players or the guys playing the game.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think it's been as diverse, as dominant of a run game consistently. The receivers, certainly due to both injuries and struggles, have affected Matt Ryan and the team's bottom line. Certainly, I think Ryan, like two-thirds of interceptions this season, have been off deflected passes from his own wideout. So, yeah, it's just been, I don't know, something's not quite clicking the way it was last year, and it's probably a combination of things. And frankly, given what a record-breaking offense that was last year, I think it was probably a bit naive to think it was going to click just the same way. So that's going to be an exciting one. I don't know if there's going to be a lot of defense, so maybe this will be the other type of game in primetime that fans will love to watch Sunday night, the Super Bowl rematch. Spinning it forward to Monday, we got another interesting one, Greg, with Washington visiting Philadelphia, and these are two quarterbacks playing about as well as anyone not named Tom Brady in the NFL right now. Kirk Cousins and Carson Wentz really seem to be finding their stride, huh?
Yeah, Cousins is in a unique situation in that this is the second year in a row he's been on the franchise tag. I think it's virtually impossible for the Redskins to franchise him again next year. It will cost them close to $30 million in cap space, and I don't think any team can really do that and keep the people around them, and, you know, keep the key people around them and pay them. So unless he gets a long-term deal done, I think you're going to see Cousins go somewhere, and I think because he hasn't done a long-term deal, that we will see him go somewhere else. I think he just doesn't want to be there. But that has nothing to do with his talent. This guy, you know, he's a later round pick, remarkable player, doesn't have the physical skill set that some of the other top quarterbacks have. The guy across from him, Carson Wentz, he doesn't have the physical skill set of him, but very, very smart, very instinctive, reads defenses very well, gets the ball out of his hand quickly, and is very, very accurate. You know, and on top of that, the play calling is good, too. Now you look at Carson Wentz, guy who played at a 1AA or FCS level, missed a good part of his senior year, his final year at North Dakota State because of a broken arm. You know, played about five games earlier in the year, then broke his arm, didn't come back until the national championship game, and really had an average game there because he had missed like seven or eight games in between. But to come in, and then you go back to last year in his preseason, you know, he only played like two series. He got injured and then didn't play the rest of the preseason, yet he was the starter, the day one starter, and played remarkable football early in the year and then kind of hit the wall, so to speak. But now he's had a full offseason, just having an outstanding year. I mean, he's completing 61% of his passes. He's got 13 touchdowns, only two interceptions, and he's just going to keep getting better. He's going to be probably in another 2 years, he'll be one of the top three quarterbacks in the league.
So I guess what I'm hearing, Greg, we've got Tom Brady's 40, Drew Brees, I think, 39. You got other guys getting up there, whether it's Eli and Rivers and Carson Palmer. And we talk about the you know, kind of the rough state of quarterbacking in the NFL. But what do you think? Will the league be in good hands when all these Hall of Famers do move on? And we already mentioned Derek Carr and some of these younger guys and Carson Wentz. What do you think about the pipeline of the next young quarterback wave? Is it maybe better than some give it credit for? You got Dak Prescott, too, obviously. I mean, there's other names in here as well.
Yeah, it's an evolution, maybe. It's part of the reason that I don't think some of these guys have stood out earlier in their career. Some of them were forced, some were overdrafted, some were forced in to play earlier than they were ready to play. But you go back and, you know, look at the top guys, the Tom Brady's, the, you know, the Mannings, the Brees, what kind of offenses were they playing when they were in college? Were they were playing in more pro-style offenses. So when they came into the league, they were a little bit more ready to play in that style offense than the guys coming out of college now. And the NFL has had to adapt to the players coming into the league rather than, you know, you can't afford to let these guys sit because you might not have anybody better than them. And we've seen that in Chicago this year where they brought in a veteran, paid him a lot of money, but he couldn't play. And he had to play the rookie in Mitch Trubisky. And, you know, these guys play in different types of spread offenses. Not all of them are the same. Some are half field read, some are full field read, but it's not anything like the pro game, regardless of what kind of spread offense they're in. But what you're seeing in the NFL game now, because of this, is we're seeing every year more and more spread type offenses. Now they're far more sophisticated than what we see in college, but still their similarity, and the similarity is that they're not taking snaps from under center, they're playing in the gun.
Sure.
So just to help them acclimate to the pro game a little bit more. And I think, you know, as these guys get experience, these young guys are going to be the top players in the league. It's taken, you know, Bortles is probably having his best year, and he's still been inconsistent, but he was horrible his first 3 years in the league, and now in his fourth year he's getting a little bit better, but still inconsistent. So it remains to be seen whether he's going to be a top guy. You could say the same thing about Tannehill, but other guys like Dak Prescott is doing well. Carson Wentz is doing well. Jared Goff, you know, struggled his first year, playing better football this year.
Right.
We've seen the upside with Trubisky. So yeah, it's just going to take time. But yeah, some of these guys, I think think a lot of these young guys are going to be the great quarterbacks in the league over the next few years.
And, of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Deshaun Watson, who has taken this league by storm early and building on that spread principle introduction that you mentioned. Bill O'Brien deserves a ton of credit. Yes, he waited a half into week one to give Tom Savage the hook, but and the Texans are on bye this week, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on him, but what have you thought about what Bill O'Brien's done, just kind of in the same vein of what you were just discussing?
Well, I mean, Bill O'Brien was one of the guys who was involved in the development of Tom Brady. Now, he was after Charlie Weiss, who was, you know, the original guy. But, you know, O'Brien's a very capable coach. But at the same time, when you try to, compare one guy to the next, and let's say, you know, we use two rookies that are playing, actually three, you could say Deshaun Kizer also, who's a second-round pick, who's playing in Cleveland, but Trubisky, Watson, and Deshaun Kizer, and you could say, well, this guy's playing great, so he should have gone first. It's not the case. You've got to look at the team and what's around them and look at the supporting cast and, how plays are being called. Deshaun Watson has a lot more around him on the offense than Mitchell Trubisky has in Chicago. And so that's going to, because of Trubisky has what he has around him, that's going to limit what he can do offensively as compared to Watson and Houston. You know, if you flip-flop them and you put Trubisky in Houston and Watson here, I'm sure Trubisky would be much more like Watson as far as numbers.
Yeah, it makes sense. He's Greg Gabriel. I'm Arthur Arkus. This is the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Check it out on iTunes. Give us a rating and a review while you're there. After you've subscribed, check out Greg on Twitter at Greg Gabe. I'm at Arthur Arkus, and we're spending a few more minutes just kind of bouncing around the Week 7 slate, just sort of kind of spitballing, frankly. Just lastly on that Washington Philly game, Greg, the defenses have played a big part in this too, and I've been surprised by what Washington's been able to get accomplished. No, it wasn't as good coming off the bye in that survival act versus the 49ers last week, but it's largely been solid. They're playing well up front. They're playing well in a young secondary that's kind of banged up now. And then Jim Schwartz coaching up those Eagles, one of the best run defenses in football, and they're finding ways to sort of cover up the secondary. Which team do you think's done a better job, and do you worry about Jonathan Allen going down and what the depth looks like in that Washington defensive front, or do you worry more about that Philadelphia secondary and how they've kind of gotten by thus far without getting overly exposed, but they're still pretty short there without the likes of Ronald Darby and, of course, Sidney Jones?
Well, Darby's, I think, started practicing again this week, but I doubt he's going to play on Monday night. It might be another week or two before him. But I think Jonathan Allen's going to be a huge loss for the Redskins.
Yeah.
Real good run defender. But you look at Schwartz, Schwartz has been a head coach in the league. He probably has a good chance of being a head coach again. But, one of the things they've been able to do is consistently pressure the quarterback and get sacks, and that's helped, hurry the passer, and that's helped the secondary,
right,
which is weak. But they've got a strong linebacker core. They've got a strong defensive line. They got a rotation within the defensive line, so they're not just playing with four guys. They're playing with more like six guys. And, I just think that there isn't a real dominant team in the NFL, but right now the best team in the league is Philly. And you look at their schedule, the first part of their schedule, they were on the road a lot. I think three out of their first four games or something, they're on the road. Now they got three in a row at home, and that's really unheard of. You go through the schedule, how often do you see a team play three games in a row at home? You see two, but you seldom see three, and that's what Philly has right now, and I think this is the first of three.
Yeah, that's a great point by you. Their only loss was in week one in Washington, so we've got a rematch here, and that was 30-17. Actually, Carson Wentz kind of started out a little sloppy, and then sort of actually both quarterbacks didn't play well in that game. They've been playing much better since. Lastly, on the Eagles, and I'm kind of throwing curveballs at you at this point, so don't worry if Greg hasn't had time to prepare for this, but do you think with Cliff Avril going down in Seattle, is there a better group of horses? You mentioned the Eagles pass rush. You've got Fletcher Cox, and you've got Brandon Graham, the rookies contributing. Now Timmy Jernigan looks like a great trade acquisition. That might be the best defensive front in football right now, huh, Greg?
Well, they're strong, but at the same time, I think a lot of it has to do with Schwartz.
Yeah.
And, you know, go back to when he was in Buffalo as a defensive coordinator after he got fired from Detroit as the head coach. You know, he took a defense that was terrible the year before and made it one of the better defenses in the league, and he was only there a short time, and then Rex Ryan came in, and he didn't stick around with Rex Ryan, and then the defense went downhill again.
Right.
And, you know, so he's an outstanding coach. He was a great coach when he was at Tennessee, coaching the defense. But I got to correct you on one thing. You said that Philly lost in that opening game to Washington. They won.
Oh, you're right. They lost. Where did Philly suffer? To the Chiefs. Thank you. Yep. Yep.
Right. Yeah, and that, you know, that was Andy Reid's wasn't the homecoming because the game was at Kansas City, but it was still Andy playing against his home team. But they beat Wentz at 307 yards in that first game. They lose to Kansas City 27-20, and then they beat New York. They beat the Chargers. They beat Arizona, and then last week Carolina, and Carolina's a strong football team on Thursday night, so
yep.
This is going to be an interesting game against Washington, but the important thing is when you look at the division standings, and if Philly's able to win this game again, that's 2-0 against Washington, who is probably their toughest competition in the NFC East, and that just gives them head and shoulders above everybody else to win the NFC East title. And then you look at the rest of their schedule, it's really not that hard, except that, you know, they got a game against Denver, but that is in Philly. The next three games are in Philly: Washington, San Francisco, and Denver. So they're 5-1 now. They could very well be 8-1 before they go on. Then they have a bye, and then they go on the road to Dallas.
Yeah, they're playing excellent football. Thank you for correcting me on that. Of course, I'm just talking silliness here. I've got one more NFL game for you quickly, Greg. Then I want to just very quickly go over your insert column this week. You mentioned one big college game. Then we'll get you out of here. Saints-Packers, what do you think about Brett Hundley getting his opportunity? Of course, it's bad for the league that Aaron Rodgers breaks his collarbone, but it was a clean football hit, as you mentioned at our website this week. Nonetheless, what does Mike McCarthy do with Brett Hundley, and what type of test does this seemingly much improved Saints defense coming in first pose Green Bay?
Well, athletically, Hundley is similar to Rodgers. He just obviously doesn't have the same type of passing talent or arm talent that Aaron Rodgers had. But I think he's going to have a full week to get ready for this game. They'll adjust the offense to try to play to his strengths, and I think that you're going to see Green Bay play a lot better than people are anticipating them playing. You know, a lot of people think Rodgers is out, they're going to lose. And I, you know, when you got strong coaches, and McCarthy's one of the best, and that whole coaching staff is outstanding, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, this game is in Green Bay, isn't it?
It is, and, yes.
Yeah, so with the game being in Green Bay, and I just think you're going to see McCarthy do a very, very good job with Hundley in this game. You know, could be a Green Bay win, but at least a close game. New Orleans is one of the surprise teams in the league. They lose their first two. They've won three in a row now, and they're putting a lot of points on the board. Just their defense has been inconsistent. Won last week, but they still gave up 38 points.
Right, yeah, a lot of them late, though, and they shut out the Dolphins the week prior. What do you think about, I mean, they're playing better in the secondary. They've got Marshon Lattimore's playing extremely well. They got this other corner, kind of seemed to come out of nowhere, and Kenny Crawley. What is Dennis Allen doing? Do you think it's sustainable at all? Again, I know Detroit kind of made a late surge to make that one a shootout, like 50-38 or something crazy like that. But do you think the Saints, what they're doing, is it a mirage, or do you think they can find a way to sustain it defensively?
Well, I think they've been, I don't think they've been as good as some people think, and I don't think they've been as bad. That they've been solid and
yeah.
Getting pressure on the quarterback. You got their leading sackers, Cameron Jordan, who's a quality player. He's got 5 sacks. You know, Alex Okafor's got 2. A.J. Klein, his linebacker's got 1. But Trey Hendrickson, who I think is an interesting rookie from Florida International or Florida Atlantic or something, he's got 1 sack and 5 total tackles, and they're going to try to get him more time because he's got edge pass rushing ability. The guy, they got to get a little bit more production. He's had injury problems. This is their number one a year ago, Sheldon Rankins. He's only got 4 tackles going into this game.
Right.
But They're a good team. Are they a great team? No, and it's Drew Brees that the offense. Sean Payton is a great offensive coach, and they've got Drew Brees has been there a long time. He knows the offense upside down and inside out. He puts up outstanding numbers. You look at his numbers. I mean, he's completing almost 69% of his passes, 10 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions. The running game, it's all right. It's a little better than 100 yards a game. They share it between Ingram and Kamara. They had, obviously, Adrian Peterson, but he didn't do a whole lot there before he got traded to the Cardinals a week ago. He only had 81 yards in their first 4 games. But I think a lot of it is the way Sean Payton has that offense designed and the guy, you know, under center, Drew Brees.
Yeah, I guess they didn't miss Adrian Peterson too much last week. The run game just explodes with Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. And, hey, maybe that's one of those rare win-wins because, obviously, at least for 1 week, the Cardinals were kind of reborn with Peterson sort of turning back the clock. I'm not sure he can sustain that, but it was fun for a week. I've already kept you too long, Greg, but I just very quickly have to ask. You broke down USC at Notre Dame in our weekly newspaper insert, and I just want to get your thoughts about 60-90 seconds. Sam Darnold, the rumor in league circles now is that he is likely to return. He hasn't played maybe quite as well as most were expecting, but of course he's so young for USC. USC visits Notre Dame this week. Just your thoughts on Darnold and maybe one or two other guys that our listeners should keep an eye on this weekend in this rivalry.
Well, Darnold's a quality quarterback, but he's been very inconsistent. Just hasn't developed or grown the way that you thought he would after the year he had last year. Part of it is his delivery. He's got a, you know, for lack of a better word, a funky type delivery. It's a little bit long. He drops the ball down low. He has good arm strength, but he just hasn't been reading defenses that well. He's turned the ball over a lot between fumbles and interceptions. And part of that too, he's got basically a brand new offensive line. They have a lot of those guys go to the NFL last year, and the same with the receivers. So he doesn't have the same supporting cast around them. And, you know, in college football, the prognosticators are always, you know, they rank USC high because it's USC, but they don't look at the turnover in personnel. And USC has had a huge turnover in personnel from a year ago. And you look at a guy like Sam Darnold, he's still got 2 years of eligibility left. This is only the second year he's really been playing. He redshirted his first year, played last year, and, you know, for all extents and purposes, he's a sophomore. I mean, he's a junior school-wise, but he's a sophomore, and he's got 2 years of eligibility left. I think the smart thing for him to do is stay in school. Could he go in the top 5? Sure, because there's a lack of top quarterbacks in the league, and they get overdrafted, and he will go high if he goes into the draft. But the best thing for him to develop and be ready to play in the NFL is to stay in school. And I think he realizes that because, you know, scouts who have made school calls there have told me that, the thinking right now, and obviously there's a long way to go between now and January when the players got to declare, but the thinking is that he will stay in school.
Okay, interesting stuff. Greg, this was great. I told you I'd only keep you here for a half hour. I went over, so we're going to get out of here. But we appreciate having coming back on the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. It's been a while. We'd love to have you back on soon. Once again, of course, Greg's work you can read every week at ProFootballWeekly.com, also in this newspaper insert on Thursdays in the Chicagoland area, in a few markets around the country, too. You can get that information at ProFootballWeekly.com. Check him out on Twitter, at Greg Gabe. I am at Arthur Eckers. That's going to do it for this week's Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. Enjoy the Week 7 slate, and we will be back to talk to you next week on the PFW Podcast.